This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. It's a pleasure to welcome my good colleague, Richard Epstein of the Civitas Institute, teaches law at NYU and the University of Chicago, and is the 2025 recipient of the Henry Tobey Award from the Pacific Research Institute for being an all-around really helpful person when it comes to the vicissitudes of current events. Henry Taub was a colleague of yours at one point, I understand, Professor.
Much to my amazement, I never put it together until you read the resume this morning. He was a chemist at the University of Chicago, went out to Berkeley, and I had to deal with a very difficult issue as a faculty member. How much outside work can a faculty member do? And it was one of the committees where people who did none wanted everybody else to do very little. And people who did a lot wanted a lot of people to do a lot of work. And so the great question is, do you count the weekend when you're doing a calculation of what does it mean to consult for one day a week? And some people wanted a situation which says one day a week means one day during the week, and then you could work on the weekend. And then they said, well, if you want to swap days around, that's okay too. And it was always the most productive faculty who wanted to do this. And we never could get it straight as to exactly how that thing ought to work. Which shows you again that academics is a strange business because notwithstanding the uniformity of title, there is an enormous disparity in ability from top to bottom. And the fact that Henry won a Nobel Prize kind of tells you that the people who wanted to consult tended to be the people whom you wanted to keep. And such was a great challenge.
Well, congratulations. We put you immediately into action.
Good.
The FT headline, Disney capitulation over Jimmy Kimmel sparks fears for U.S. media under Donald Trump. Subhead, Bob Iger's suspension of comedian show on ABC over Charlie Kirk comments fuels free speech controversy. One more time, Richard, the First Amendment. Is there wiggle room there? Good evening to you.
We never know these days. Look, this is a very difficult situation because they're not saying I'm going to ban you. They're just going to say I'm going to go after you. And my view about it is this is a horrible mistake as a matter of policy and that it's not the kind of thing that you want to therefore give any precedent to because the free speech issues are very real. It would weigh one thing if it was just anybody else who said that. But the problem is it's also the Federal Communications Commission. And the implicit threat here is either you do what we want on this issue or we're going to take it out on you in the various ways in which we control it. And this, I think, is a terrible mistake. In saying all of this, it's the usual problem that you always have. Jimmy Kimmel was an adult. To say the kind of thing that he said without knowing anything is a form of irresponsible jerkdom, which no sane person should do. But the question is not whether he was a dummy. The question is, what's the appropriate remedy? In an earlier day with a less frantic president, with a president who had less revenge on his mind because of the way in which he had been horribly abused by the media, everybody would have said, look, we think the network ought to apologize. We think Kimmel ought to apologize. We now make a vow of one kind or another that we will not engage in jumping to conclusions that are consistent with our ideological predilection, and we hope that we can keep your trust. And even if he did that, and even if the apology was successful, he would still suffer a very serious reputational blow, because not doing something is not the same as doing something and then giving a makeshift policy or apology afterwards. And in many ways, it was already too late. Literally, after he got off the air and somebody viewed that, they should have been right back on the air. And the apology should have been not after there was a threat. The apology should have been immediately. But these guys have the terrible problem of thinking themselves as God. And now that they're facing this demon, and they believe that they have extra privileges in order to attack him. And it wasn't just that he was attacking Charlie Kirk. What he was trying to do was to demean everything that Trump is associated with by simply guilt of association. So it is a very serious offense. Now, how is it going to play out if Trump doesn't play the Trump card, as it were? Well, what will happen is Kimmel will lose viewership. I think it's pretty clear that all of the left-wing talking heads are now regarded by large portions of the American population as less credible than they really thought them to be. And when you lose credibility, you lose audience. And so the way in which I always like to have these plays out is if Jimmy Kimmel is going to go, it should be for inability to keep his viewership intact. And I think that is actually starting to happen. It's a really terrible world in some sense. Both sides are now guilty of exaggeration. Trump himself always goes after everybody. There's no compromise position. His remarks about Jimmy Kimmel as being a kind of a moron, adult, a loser, worse than somebody else or whatever it is. Those are the kinds of remarks that balanced people don't make. And then what happens is the people on the other side, they start to capitulate to the threat. And you always are worried about the following thing. One guy does something stupid. Somebody in response to something stupid by overreaction, there are a lot of innocent people who are going to be caught in the crossfire. And so if you're a newspaper or if you're broadcast stuff and you know that you have to get your license renewed, you realize that if somebody goes rogue, as it were, for the slightest thing, it's not a question of an apology or a modest sanction. It's the ultimate death. There's a way of playing poker today, which seems to be very difficult to beat, is you do not bet the value of your hand. Either you're in for everything or you're out. And the point about being in for everything is there's nobody, therefore, who can try to figure out what you're doing or to moderate their behavior in response to yours. Trump is a master of the all-in strategy, and the only way you could beat him is to knock his feet out. But just think of what's going on right now. No deal with Harvard, $2 billion. Miss Lisa Cook, we'll talk about that later. No deal with her. Out she starts to go. And so what you see with Trump, one thing after another, it's always the foot on the accelerator, or if it's on the brake, it's going to be slamming it shut. There's no intermediate kind of graduation. And essentially, to succeed in life, proportionality is one of those maxims that you have to respect, even though it's extremely difficult to enforce from the outside. But if you don't respect it, then everything is going to become a Twitter. So I am, in fact, genuinely worried about third-party effects of a man who now says, I've got this bazooka and I'm going to aim it at anybody who says a peep in the wrong direction. And it's not that he's going to do it in every case, but the fear that he will do it has what they used to call in the old days a chilling effect, which was something not tolerated by the First Amendment. So I think he's on very dicey grounds in this particular situation. I wish he wouldn't do it. I'd rather wish that he would apologize. And I think what happens is, I think the networks all ought to be chastened, not to make speculation, but to report what they know and to leave it at that. And it's not funny. It's very serious. And when Victor Hansen spoke at the event that I received my award yesterday by, he's on the teleprompter and so forth, he was very careful about the sense. If you looked at the reaction that took place when George Floyd, a murderer, felon, whatever it was he was, anything happened to him, you tear the building down. And then you start to look at the conservatives. And what happens when they kill in cold blood Charlie Kirk? They hold prayer vigils. And I think that's the side of the line that Trump ought to be on. He should be holding the vigils, which he did, but he should not be doing the other stuff. And what happens is you want to make sure that when you attack something like the outrages that happened in response to George Floyd, you're on very firm moral and legal grounds when you do it.
Richard, you and I are public speakers and have been for years. You cannot control how people hear your words, but you can control your words.
Yep.
That is good advice for anyone on the public air. I note a remark by Mr. Carr, the chairman of the FCC. I'm very glad to see that America's broadcasters are standing up to serve the interests of their community. That has merit, that statement, and there is reason to apply that statement to the conduct of all broadcasters. Have we forgotten that it's a privilege to be on the American air and that our words can be hurtful?
Well, yes, but the word privilege here is really very, very dicey. I suppose you didn't have an FCC. What would happen is people could get on the air like a podcast like this, and they would not have any licensing requirements.
Correct.
And so the moment the licensing starts to come in, it's always understood that there are a set of conditions that are permissible.
That's when we're on the radio or the television. Yes.
Or the television, and a set that are not. So the conditions that are principled are ones that say, oh, you keep obscenity off the air, that you can't overstay your time, you can't broadcast in somebody else's frequency and the like, and a few other decency requirements. But otherwise, the purpose of a license is to make sure that these propositions are observed and then give as much freedom as you can. So the great challenge has always been from the beginning of the FCC is to how it is that you have freedom of speech in an environment in which they own the airwaves. Now, one of the proposals that has been made, and I'm actually quite in favor of it, goes back to Ronald Coase back in the 1950s. And what Ronald proposes is that you sell off the frequencies so they have ownership positions and not licensing positions. At that point, you don't have an FCC who can intervene. What you do is you make it much more like privacy. And to give you the obvious example, how would we work if it turns out we had the Federal Media Commission, which could license newspapers? It would be a catastrophe. Same thing happens with the FCC. And so it's the nature of the ownership system that creates the conundrum. And a sensible reform would have been to do it that way. The problem is when they tried to put this forward as some kind of an idea, it got shot down. And the culprit, at least in the communications area, was none other than Justice Felix Frankfurter. Because when he said about the licenses, he didn't say, oh, I just want to push the boundary line so you don't interfere. I don't want to send traffic lanes. What I want to do is to police the composition of the traffic. And that's where you start getting into censorship, even in the cases where you just have to decide which party is going to get a license when many people can apply for something worth nothing. And that government control is utterly unnecessary in this particular case. Auction these off, make them private property, and then if they commit defamation or something like that, they could be sued just the way a newspaper or an ordinary person can be. So there's a huge structural defect here, which was identified in the 1950s, and yet we've never done anything about it because there are too many people who gain power. If what they can do is to go to somebody who owns one of these stations and say, either you give us the following favor or we're going to oppose your license renewal. And it's keeping everything in political solution. That gives Carr the power that no human being ought to have.
Isn't this a detail of corporate life as well? Mr. Iger made a decision on what's best for Disney. That's his responsibility to the shareholders. Mm-hmm. And he has other reasons to worry that the government could slow down or regulate decisions he's making. And so, therefore, it's a balancing act for a private company, a CEO. And Mr. Iger was responsible, as the performance of that provocation was not responsible.
Look, I mean, he's facing the same problem that the law firms faced some time ago when Trump says, either you do it my way or you don't get access to the press or to any government agency. And it's the kind of abuse that you don't want. And so what's happened is Donald Trump was terribly abused. I want to repeat right now what I've said many times before, that the use of these kinds of powers under the Biden administration was every bit as disgraceful as it is with Trump. And yet the people on the left did not raise a peep when they went after the people. I'm sitting here, and I think the appropriate thing is to say, I don't have any friend. Or to put the maxim in a slight way, it's not possible that two inconsistent parties can be both right, but it is possible that two inconsistent parties can be both wrong. And so when I give speeches on this topic or interviews or whatever, I tend to think a plague on both your houses is the appropriate metaphor by which you want to shop the discussion. Now, the reason why you're more upset about Trump now than Biden is he can't do anything, and Trump is president of the United States, and he's riding high on virtually every issue where he takes positions that are way beyond the norm, whether it's executive power, whether it's tariffs or everything else. If he's drawn these things, he's over the edge. And this is a man who's already had some very substantial accomplishments that he's already done on the right side of things. And so why is he frittering away his reputation and his legacy by doing these kinds of
abusive
behaviors?
Let's go to the edge, Professor. Let's rush to the edge. I enjoy the metaphor. Professor Richard Epstein of the Civitas Institute, reporting from the Pacific Coast, soon coming home to the East Coast. We're headed to the Supreme Court with Donald Trump and the matters of Federal Reserve. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.